everybody, and welcome along to the Traction Podcast. Today's show is certainly going to split opinions. Basically, we want to discuss whether or not sim racing and esports have a place within the real world of motorsport. I personally cannot wait for this one. Joining me today is a man whose real-life driving career includes drifting and autocrossing and Nissan 240SX. It's Justin Sutton. Justin, how's things?
I'm good, thank you very much.
And also joining me is a man who has actually lapped the Nordschleife, albeit in a Fiat Panda. It's Tom HL. How are you?
I'm very good and happy to be alive. And also thanks to my better half, Lisa, for being in the passenger seat the whole time, which she's braver than me.
Ballast.
Oh, yes, that's what you want. I've been around the Nordschleife with my family as passengers, and the fact that they were passengers made me enjoy it way more than if I'd just been driving it on my own. It's good fun.
I'm so mad at both of you. I love the Nordschleife so much. It's my favorite track ever. I desperately want to drive it.
One day it'll happen, Justin. One day it'll happen.
Maybe if you learn on the sim.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you for that. Yeah. Leading in, this topic in particular, there are so many loaded questions that we could delve into, right? There's so many different angles to this. You know, does sim racing deserve a place within the real industry? Is it now a feasible career path? I mean, we'll come on to a few of them today. Well, obviously, I don't want to cover them all because we will be here all day. The thing that actually inspired this discussion, guys, which I'm sure you guys have heard about as well, is the recent announcement that the Real Life GT World Challenge Series will apparently become the first in history to have esports results affecting the real championship standings. So I should explain, I don't think it's going to affect the driver standings or anything like that. It's just that the teams from the Real Life Series will also enter their cars into an esports championship that runs alongside it, and they will pick real esports drivers, and then the points scored in those races will actually have an impact on the manufacturers and teams' championships in the series. This is probably one of the first times where you have a situation where real life racing is going to be affected directly by esports and stuff like that. I don't know where to start with this one. I'd love to hear your thoughts. I'll maybe go to you first, Justin. What's your thoughts on this?
I'm one of those people that actually, so I think there can be a link between esports and sim racing. Oh my God. Someone's
at least
here.
We've got easy place to pick up from.
Yep. Hold on one second.
Someone's very excited.
Can we get your dog on the podcast?
I might actually just quickly... Let's leave this in. I think what's your dog called?
I've got two dogs. One is named Chevelle, weirdly enough. Because I mentioned the Chevelle earlier. We didn't name either of them. They're both rescues. And the other is named Lexi, like a stripper. But that was her name when we adopted her. We're not going to change her name. All right. Okay. So, sorry. So I think that there can be a link between esports and real racing. We've seen that there can be a link between esports and real racing before. We've literally seen people already make the transition. But I am one of those people, and there are others among me on social media that agree with me on this. I don't think it necessarily should always be the end all be, you know what I mean? I think some people should be happy to be a sim racer. And I think some people are best as a sim racer. And I think being a sim racer should be lucrative enough that making that step into real life racing becomes necessary or something. I think the esports guys should make maybe slightly less. They're not in as much danger as the real racing drivers, but they should make enough to survive. And it shouldn't be the natural step that, oh, F1 esports, well, you get a ride in an F1 car. NASCAR esports, you get a ride in a NASCAR car. And Formula E, you get a ride in a Formula E car. I think we're getting too much into that, and I think it's good to have some division. So I'm a little bit on both sides. I don't think it should always go that way, but I think there are times when it makes sense.
Tom, what's your thoughts on that? Sorry. On you go.
Yeah, well, just enlighten me a little bit, John, about this particular GT World Challenge series. So my understanding, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is first of all, there's a lot of derision about this format. There's a lot of unhappy people on the internet, but then, I don't know, today's another day, so that's nothing changes there. But there's €125,000 of prize money, I think. But then anyone can't enter. And existing esports drivers can't necessarily enter. Sort of the team nominates the driver, so it seems a bit weird how there's some prize money involved in there. Is that correct?
That sounds correct. Yeah. So as far as I'm aware, there as you say, there's €125,000 prize pool, I believe, and It's going to be run on Assetto Corsa Competizione, which is, of course, the official game for that series. Now,
which makes sense.
As far as I'm... Yep. Yeah, exactly. And I can see where the links are. I think it's sponsored by Fanatec as well, so there's a lot of links there.
Yep.
I think that there's going to be a lot of people that read this on the surface and don't really delve into it. They're just going to be thinking, oh no, here we are with a video game that's going to be ruining championships for people in real life, and they're going to get triggered. And it's going to be... It's not as simple as that, okay? So this doesn't affect the driver standings. And as you say, it seems like the teams actually have to go out and scout or pick their esports drivers for their teams, right? So effectively, they're making signings who are then going to go on and try and get some prize money. The events will be run at the circuits, and I think there's only 5 of them planned at the moment to happen. So I don't think this is going to be the be-all and end-all. I don't think it's going to completely destroy the manufacturer's championship or the team standings or anything like that. But what I would say is, if it has any impact in the slightest on positions, it's going to create so much division. And it's going to, I think that when you add, you know, having an esports championship separate as a separate entity on its own, it's simple because you've got the rules, you've got the game, everyone knows where they stand. You know, you can pick your cars or you can have limits and rules in the cars. That's absolutely fine. But as soon as you tie it to a real life series and actually make it have an impact, so it's not just running alongside it as a separate series, you know, you've got the argument that, you know, say a team have been doing an amazing job all season in a Lamborghini and they're 3 points clear in the team's standings and it looks like they're going to win the championship. Then suddenly the esports event goes to a track where the Lamborghini's rubbish on a set of Corsa Competizione. Their drivers get taken out lap one because they're at the back of the field. They end up rubbish. And the team who were second in the standings had an OP car for that track in the game, even if it's not in real life. And then they get loads of points, and then it gives the manufacturers points, and then they win the real-life championship. Like, there's potential for some serious issues here because of the way that games and sims work in general. It wouldn't be a problem if it was specific to the game and sim, as I say, if the points were all counting towards a separate thing, because then it's a separate thing. As soon as you involve the two, you are going to need to bet that that esports championship is absolutely officiated properly. You're going to have to bet that it's as fair as possible, that the cars are well balanced. It's not going to be the most simple thing ever. And I think that, I mean, I love that someone's trying something like this. I think it's really, really good, but it just needs to be done so carefully.
Oh, I've got an alternative theory. Well, I agree that it's going to be very careful and there's going to be a lot of uproar and all these ramifications. And at the end of season, someone might be bothered to check if this team didn't have the esports results, then they would have finished first or third. But how about this? Just to be devil's advocate for a second. As fans and supporters of motorsport, we care about the drivers' championship. Don't really care about the team's championship. It's nice, but we don't really care. Now, manufacturers who are paying to enter series, they care about the manufacturers or the team's championship because they think that's what's going to give them the marketing in the long run. But the GT World Challenge Series doesn't really have as manufacturer-backed drivers, but it's privateer teams, right? It's not an official manufacturer championship. So this, to me, has less of a relevance or anger point. You know, if it was a driver's championship, I'd be more frustrated. And secondly, I think at least they're trying something different. Stefan Rattel, the boss of SRO, look how he's taken the series. You know, this guy used to be a privateer in a Venturi in the 90s, and he's now the boss of one of the biggest GT championships in the world. Very successful person and isn't afraid of taking a risk. So I would say let's judge it on the season's racing and then let's have an argument at the end of the year once we've seen what it looks like. That's my opinion. That's very strong.
You said devil's advocate, and it's not really a devil's advocate opinion because it's a very valid point.
I was a hypocrite.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with what you're saying. I think we need to wait and see. And to be honest, the example that I'm going to use, you know, when you hear something new that's been trialed and there's going to be issues on the face of it that make it seem unfair. The first example I'm going to use is Formula One single lap qualifying. So a format got brought into Formula One where you only had one lap to set your time and you would go out one by one and set your lap time. You weren't all on track at the same time. And the obvious questions that spawn from that is, hang on a minute, what if you're out last because you were first in practice and then it rains halfway through and the Minardis and the Jordans are on pole and your Ferraris at the back of the grid? Now, that's motorsport. That's a part of motorsport that we accept. You know, the World Rally Championship, if you're first out on the road on a gravel rally, you're going to lose a minute and a half to your competitors because you have no grip. That's just the way it works sometimes. And that's not frowned upon. I mean, it's discussed and debated, but it's not necessarily frowned upon because that's part of the sport. And someone needed to take that leap in the first place for it to be okay, if that makes sense. You know, the single lap qualifying, someone had to say, you know what, it's fine. If someone gets screwed over by it, it's fine. And I kind of think that that is a similar situation with this. I feel like someone's got to try it, and I think it's really cool, and I think it could definitely inspire some other ideas, or at least more thinking along those lines. Especially, it's going to improve both sides of things, because it's going to bring more real life racers towards esports and maybe towards ACC, but it's also going to bring ACC fans and esports fans towards the GT World Challenge. So I can see why it could work, and it's definitely got us talking. It's definitely made the series more popular. So I'm with the devil here. I think that let's see how it plays out. Let's not get too worried about it. I know I made a strong case earlier, like I was quite strongly opinionated about it. They need to get it right. I still think they need to be careful with it, but I don't think we should all start setting fires before it's actually begun.
I think it should be its own championship. I think it should be its own championship personally. I'm happy for them to do it, but I think it should be its own standings and maybe have its own. Does it have its own prize pool? Is that right? So it's completely separate.
Sports drivers will get money for their performances, so that's good.
But so it affects the team standings, but that also affects money as well too. So I don't know. I wish it was separate. You know, I love that they're bringing the drivers to the track. And I would assume that they're going to be driving that track while they're there at that track, you know? So
yeah,
if you're at Silverstone, because that is like exactly what I've always wanted F1 esports to be. You know, if you really, truly want your esports to be the pinnacle of racing, you know, sim racing esports, ship the guys around, have them race on Saturday night after qualifying at the track, put it up on the big screen, invite people who were there to see qualifying earlier to come check it out. No additional cost whatsoever. Broadcast it to everyone. You do 100% races or maybe 50% races. You just make a huge spectacle out of it rather than having it in a tiny little theater in the middle of England and running weird 33% distance races and all that kind of stuff. Like that's nothing special. I mean, Gran Turismo has a better production when it comes to, you know, putting on a show and stuff like that. So I like that they're doing that. And I like that there's money involved. I like that they're scouting the drivers as well too, because that's much more natural as well. You know, that's how drivers get picked up in the real world. You know, they can come from any number of series. They don't have to like go through some sort of qualifying event with 10,000 other people to try and prove that they're good enough for the team or whatever. And I think that's starting to lose its value, if I'm honest. You know, we're at a stage now with sim racing as an esport that we know people's names and stuff like that. People are established and stuff like that. It's not just a bunch of kids in their mom's basements and we have no idea who they are. These are now like grown ass people who are really, really into their racing, and they're really hard. They're putting thousands of hours into these games and stuff like that. And it's, you know, we know who they are, and they're getting well known across other things. So I just wish it was a separate championship. That's the one part that I get hung up on. I like everything else about what they're doing. I just don't like that it affects the team championship, and I wish it would separate it out.
Interesting. Yeah, I think also just, I think you touched on something there as well, just really quickly to cover this. I think one element of the frustration online is, oh, the effect, you know, like your opinion there, just, you know, it affects the team championship. But then I suppose without that, they wouldn't get the big sort of exposure and debate about, I mean, listen, we're talking about this, this championship, but this esports championship, right? In a world where there's so many of them out there, it's hard to break through now. But then, yeah, I understand. I can see where you're coming from with that, though. I can see how that can be on a knife edge. But the other frustration is that people are saying, well, hang on a minute. I can't enter. I've got a copy of the game and I might be good. You know, it's sort of closed off to everybody if the teams are just sort of looking for who's best. It's not like an online leaderboard where anyone can enter. So that's another wider debate for esports another time is how.
Why do you think, how do you think they're scouting? Just out of curiosity, and this is open to both of you guys, but yeah, like, just looking online.
I think they'll all need to speak to the right people, and I'm sure that there'll be someone within the series itself that helps them get in touch or find the best ways to scout people. And I think we'll get, I mean, with the prize pool that's on offer, they'll get some serious talent. You know, I think there'll be plenty of names that we know that will be involved in that series. And I think that's, I like that it's different. Obviously, you know, I know what you mean, Tom, about the leaderboards and not anyone can just join in. That's fine. But most industries are like that. It's not as simple to get into things as winning a leaderboard. It's the same, you know, you talked, Justin talked about real racing and how it's kind of scouting in a sense. It is, in a sense, on some situations when it's manufacturers involved. So if you, if you're Audi or if you're Porsche, you're going to pick people to represent you and you're going to pay them salaries and it's going to be contracts and stuff. But also a lot of, and I think way more than many people realize, a lot of motorsport and racing drivers, it's not like that at all. It's about who can bring the sponsors, who can get the sponsors, who can buy their way in through whatever means. And that might be because they're amazing and people are willing to put that money into them, or it might mean because they're amazing at something else, made a fortune and had the money that the team wanted to be able to drive. So it's not quite as simple as that in real life, usually. And one thing this did make me think of, though, you know, we talk about the prize pool for the individuals who are going to be in the esports league that runs alongside it. It's 125,000 euros. So as an esports driver, you can go and make some serious money in this, right? You can, you're really good. Mm-hmm. You can go and you can make money.
That's true.
A lot of the drivers in the real series, now I don't know the details of the contracts in GT World Challenge. I'm sure a lot of them are paid salaries, manufacturers are paid by sponsors, whatever it is. But I'm sure there will be some people that are buying their way onto the grid and not really earning money from it, even if they're really good. You know, it's more a case of they're able to race rather than they're making a living from it or they're earning. Who knows at that level? I couldn't possibly comment for sure. However, what it did bring up for me is, would you say that as a young driver, it's now possibly even more realistic to aim for a career in sim racing than it is to aim for a career in real racing? Is that a better money-making career path? What do you guys think?
Ooh. Ooh. I've made a noise first, so I'm going first. Is that all right, Justin?
Yeah, please do.
Oh, man. That is a million-dollar question, right? Oh, I still think that you could be much more successful and much higher paid in motor racing as opposed to sim racing. However, the chances of doing that are diminishing all the time. There's loads of pressures in the motorsport world anyway. You know, there's no tobacco, alcohol sponsorship. The oil sponsorship will soon be disappearing. There's environmental reasons why companies might not want to sponsor it. Although, on the flip side, new electric race series have a load of sponsorship and lots of paid driver opportunities, right? Extreme E and Formula E have very well-paid gigs, actually, for all those drivers. But, you know, if you think about upper echelons of sport, Formula One, or touring cars, whatever, yeah, you do need to find the sponsorship backing, and that's a lot of effort. Whereas if you're just really good and naturally talented, you could do sim racing, win races, as you say, John, and earn a living, whereas a lot of racing drivers don't earn a living and they have to do other jobs outside of the racing to pay for things, right? Driver training during the week, sponsorship meetings, all this stuff. Whereas you could be a paid sim racer who enters three or four series a year and win lots of money. What I would say to that is, to contradict myself again, or maybe go around in a big circle of gibberish, there are an explosion of esports series, or there is an explosion of esports series, sorry. But there will only be a finite amount of paid gigs or paid money for the top three. And if more and more people enter esports because it's all so accessible, will it then become harder to earn the prize pool because you're up against stiffer competition? I don't know.
I would agree with that. And I would say anybody who, essentially, I would say if you're a racing driver, you should be dipping your toe in sim racing right now, especially after 2020. So if you're a sim racing driver, you're not necessarily going to be making that transition over to real life racing. You might never find sponsorship. As you guys have pointed out, it's extremely difficult to just get into, you know, real life racing as an actual, you know, form of income to support you especially for years on end and that sort of thing. So I think, there's going to be a lot more real life racers coming into the world of sim racing, which could potentially be really bad news for these guys that are trying to make money off of sim racing. If all of a sudden you've got essentially ringers coming in, you know, guys that literally drive that car in real life, coming in with their $10,000 motion simulators and like, oh, I'm here to absolutely destroy all you kids with your Thrustmaster wheels and, you know, all of that kind of stuff.
They might get a shock, though.
I would argue that, yeah, people that do that might actually, I mean, look at it this way, look at it from the other perspective. You're a real-life racing driver, right? You're good, but you have been working your butt off every single year to try and get sponsorship together. Mm. Your family have spent all their money. You've been racing in a high series, you know, touring cars for 3-4 years, but every single season you are panicking, trying to get sponsors to be on the grid for the next season. You've right. got no money to spend on anything else. Then, you know, what's wrong with someone like that, who was maybe even someone who was a champion or someone who was, you know, set a runner up or winning races, being like, you know what, I'm really good at this and I cannot make my living out of this. A manufacturer just right. won't sign me. Why don't I now go and try and make more money in esports? You know, why don't I turn my attention yes. to esports because I know I'm good? And looking at the progression rate of prize money and prize pools on offer in esports, if you were to make a graph from where we were 10 years ago and where we are now in terms of the amount of money that can be won by a driver over a course of a season in sim racing, I think it would be huge. I think it would be really steep. And if we Massive. Keep on going this yeah. way, if esports yeah. keeps on going in this direction, yes, you're right. There will be more people at a ground level of more talented people from everywhere coming mm-hmm. in, which will make it harder to win. I think there's a lot of series nowadays where, you know, someone who would be finishing 10th, if they'd done it 10 years ago, they would have wiped the floor with everyone. You know, I think that's definitely yep. a thing. But then there's more money to go with that, and that's what's attracting people. So, you know, I could see there's a couple of different ways of looking at this, because you've got the pro driver becoming an esports driver to make money. I want to use an example as well, looking at someone who I'm sure a lot of you will know of, James Baldwin. Now, James Baldwin started racing in real life last season, British GT. Do you guys think, you know, he's an esports driver, he's clearly one of the best in the world. He's proven it on multiple occasions, multiple platforms. Now, does he have more of a chance of making money in real life racing, or would he be better off sticking to esports? Because he's clearly talented. In real life, he's proved it as well. Ooh.
I'd say I'm going to jump in on that one. I think his ceiling is bigger online, and that's because James has done the correct thing, and you see a lot of esports drivers doing this now. He's a content creator. He's a streamer. He's a YouTuber. He's diversifying, and that's something you can do as a sim racer, is that you can also be a content creator. If you're a real-life racing driver, you could also be a sim racer, I guess, but it's
instructor.
Rare that you're... Yeah, or an instructor, but it's rare that you see somebody who's a real-life racing driver, a sim racing esports driver, and also a content creator with 100,000 subs on YouTube or something like that. You know, that's a very rare... I mean, that's like, I don't, Nico Hulkenberg? Rosberg. I meant to say Nico Rosberg. But no, he doesn't do esports. So I don't think there's anybody out there, actually, that's like that. But no, you're exactly right. It's good, actually, that esports is now a place that someone can go to after having that hard time in real life racing or whatever. You know, it's almost like one final safety net, you know? So like you get kicked from F1 and you go to IndyCar, you get kicked from IndyCar, you go to something else. And it's just like one more thing that people can do. But I think James is one of those people where actually, I think he stands to make more as a sim racer, just purely because he's put in so much effort to growing his audience on that platform in particular.
Interesting. I think, I've got a couple of points that have, you know, my brain's firing off in all different directions, so bear with me. I do apologize. One is just circling back to the racing drivers who are now sim racing. Mitchell De Jong, American driver, he was a Red Bull driver in the Global Rallycross Series, which then folded. I think Travis Pastrana is trying to start some rallycross again this year in America, which would be good. But for now, he's out of a drive, but he's taking part in the iRacing eNASCAR and doing very well. He's taking part in PESC, the Tag Heuer Porsche Super Cup, and he's in championship contention as we record this episode. And so here's someone who has been successful in racing driving, and now he's also successful in sim racing. And that ties into my next point, I guess, a little bit, in that I still think that every esports driver who's doing very well is doing it as a way to prove their driving ability. I think every esports competitor who's pro, who does it full-time and is successful, still wants to be a racing driver. So maybe the
discussion exceptions, but I think you're mostly right about
okay,
that.
Okay, most of the field then. Most of the field is doing it because they want to be picked up by a race team and, oh, we'll put you in a real car or there's an opportunity for you to do some real driving. And therefore, going back to James Baldwin, I hope he does very, very well in real life and still continues the sim racing. As you said, Justin, he's diversified. That's great. He's still clearly really, really desperately deep down inside wants to be, you know, the next GT World Challenge champion in real life, right? And so maybe it's a question of maybe he won't earn as much as a racing driver ever, but these guys are all doing the esports to earn a living and then also somehow find the opportunity to do it in real life, perhaps.
I mean, it all depends on the manufacturers, yeah? So, like, if someone like Baldwin was to get picked up by a manufacturer right. and they would pay his wages, because they're the ones with the money, right? The manufacturers are the ones who can pay, pick and choose, their cherry-pick their drivers, and they have the money to go with it. And even then, they use big sponsorships and stuff to fund that. So if he could get picked up by either a sponsor, but more importantly, a manufacturer, like what we've seen in GT Academy with Nissan picking up Jan Mardenborough and you know, Lucas Ordonez, all those kind of people, that's definitely a viable way in. But the problem with that is it's so rare. It's not often that you can go from an esports series to having a manufacturer-backed drive that you don't just lose at the flick of a wrist, you know? I think that that was GT Academy was one of the rare examples of that. But normally, if it's an opportunity, it's normally, you know, you win this competition and you get a test drive in a car, or you get to compete in one round of the season, or you get a season scholarship in something. And I think that, you know, having been within the industry for a while now, a lot of that is selling the dream that's not quite as simple as it looks. So you think, you know, you're an esports driver and you think, right, I'm being told if I win this, I get to test this car. And what if I prove to them that I'm quicker than Lewis Hamilton and then they want to sign me or I get sponsors? And it feels a lot of the time like, as you say, Tom, sim racers will want to make that step and will be constantly trying to prove themselves in order to get an opportunity in real life. And of course, it does happen. It has happened and it can happen. But it's so rare, and I think there's probably more people expect it than is ever going to happen to. It's a really interesting topic. It's a really interesting topic. I also want to look on you go, on you go.
No, just quickly on James Baldwin. He won the world's fastest gamer, right? Which then opened up doors for real race drivers. But there's only one of those competitions every... It's like you say, it's very rare. So really, if I was an esports pro and my sim driving is better, but I'm not esports level like that, I would, if I'd won some prize money, I would put that towards some test days myself to prove then, okay, I can do it, and then hopefully that opens some doors. But you don't see much of that at the minute, I don't think, because obviously if you're doing it pro, you need a wage to pay the bills.
But what I would argue to that is a better alternative that's probably more realistic. Don't go and become so good at esports and spend the money on the time on that you get a drive from manufacturer, a test day or something. What you need to do is make yourself a personality, make yourself the money through esports. So look at Jimmy Broadbent, for example. Okay, make your money through esports and sim racing, become a content creator, become famous, and become someone that people and sponsors want to get behind and help, because it helps them, right? So it's mutually beneficial. Yep. As nowadays in esports, you're almost better pursuing a career path of professional esports and content creator turned into racing driver than you are esports being good enough at driving to prove myself as a racing driver. Does that make sense? I don't think it's necessarily about how good you are.
Broadbent, for example, has got a drive this year in the Brit Car in the Praga, which I'm sure is part of a combination of his talented, but he's reaching a certain number of people, and the Praga car company who makes race cars and go-karts wants to promote their products, right? That's the deal. Yeah,
and that's great. And that's it's so nice that to see that it's possible for someone who puts in loads of effort and work into sim racing and gaming can actually open up those kind of opportunities for themselves. And that's great. Absolutely. I think it's full credit to Jimmy. And I think it's unfair for people to be annoyed about that because they might feel he doesn't deserve it or whatever it is. I think it's rubbish. I think it's great. What I would say, though, and this is kind of, we were talking earlier about, you know, drivers that are coming from a career, maybe looking to esports afterwards. And, you know, what about looking at youngsters nowadays? You know, looking at, as a young kid who wants to get into racing, the traditional method was always to go through karting and try and get your sponsors there. And that's where a lot of the right people were and the stuff like that. But even karting is super, super expensive. Like, we're talking top level karting, we're talking hundreds of thousands, right? And you can still only win if you have the new tires at every round, you have the best engine, you have the best team behind you, you get the most testing. It's all money. Now, is esports, as a much more accessible platform for youngsters, a better way of starting your real racing career nowadays than go-karting? Or karting, I should say. I shouldn't say go-karting. Is that more of a realistic proposition as a youngster to try and get yourself spotted or just try and improve your skill level? I open the floor to you. I'll start with you, Justin.
I think it is, just because it's the ceiling is so much lower or the ground level rather, is so much lower in terms of the amount of money that you need in order to kind of dip your toes in it. So yeah, if you've got a kid that's under the age of like 10 or whatever, who is really into racing and, you know, maybe that's a career path for him, or at least a hobby path, or her, then, you know, I think gaming is the place to start now, certainly. Because yeah, it's a lot cheaper. I mean, you could pick up a really nice gaming PC for the same cost of an entire go-kart. And yeah, that's only, you know, as you said, you know, there's a lot of things you have to replace, and there's fuel and tires and getting to the track and stuff like that. And especially nowadays as well, with the you know, with the situation we're in, the global pandemic and all that kind of stuff, it makes even more sense now than it did back then. And more esports events are cropping up for a lot of different games. You can be, you know, you could be the fastest person in WRC9, for example. And you know, you're not necessarily the fastest sim racer on the planet, but you know, you're able to make some money from it. You know, if you can find that one that makes you happy and simultaneously you're successful and talented at and all that kind of stuff, I do think it is a better door, because yeah, it's just so much cheaper. And you can start with a console, you know, a used console and a used video game. Somebody who's picking up four games for £15 out of a bin, you know, something like that. It could start there for all you know. But the equivalent of that is going down to like the go-kart track, as we would say, going down to the go-kart track and just, you know, paying for some laps and just going around. But nobody's going to get spotted that way, you know, driving against your parents, for example, when you're like many kilograms lighter and stuff like that.
It's
really
always the dream
impressive.
It's always the dream.
Yeah, that's what I thought would happen. Yeah.
I mean, I thought I was really quick in a go-kart, you know, but someone broke it to me that actually, in fact, it's just that I'm a lot lighter than they are. So yeah, I think it is a great place to start, but you know, eventually, if you want to get into real racing, you're going to have to do some real racing.
Oh,
you know,
yes,
at some point.
I was gonna say. Yeah,
Tom.
Yeah, I agree that racing in games and simulators is essential for any upstart or someone starting out now, right? But there also comes a point where you will have to get some on-track experience and
exactly.
Prove that you're good enough. So I do agree, though, that the sim racing or just even playing a video game on a console gets you into the process of learning what the racing line is and braking points and where the tracks go. Then you can play online and you can race against other human beings and learn some racecraft, right? But just going back to, it almost comes back to what we were saying earlier, where at some point some of these esports players will have to prove themselves in real life if that's what their dream is. And the same for a young person. So esports and video games open up the floor massively and provide an opportunity for those who would never have done it in the past, but there still comes a point where you need some on-track experience if that's your end goal.
Well, I can talk from a lot of personal experience here in this particular topic. Transferable skills,
yes.
Right? Because I have, for those of you who don't know, I've done sim racing for many years, and I started with sim racing, but then I went on to do real life racing and ditched the sim racing for years. And then COVID-19 happened, and the real racing slowed down, and I was able to get back into sim racing again. So I've kind of been around the bush with this. And it's always an interesting topic when you talk about, you know, you need to learn that real experience to get good and stuff like that. Now, karting and sim racing are very, very different. You learn some skills that are similar. I think racecraft, if you sim race at a high level, you do learn racecraft. You don't learn the danger and the fear of driving, but you learn how to overtake and defend and how to manage a race situation. What I would say in terms of, you know, transferable skills, some people say, oh, you'll learn so much more from karting because you're really there, you're really feeling it, and you can take that to the car. However, I don't necessarily think it's that simple, because the way you drive a kart is very different to the way you drive most cars. Now,
true.
When I started racing, I started off in the British Sprint Championship in a single-seater, a bike-engined 1,000cc single-seater hill-climbing sprint car. So it was very, very quick, you know, not 60 in like 2.4 seconds or something crazy, and a rocket ship. And that was my first experience of being in a car. Now, when I drove that, the first event I did was Croft, and I knew Croft from years of sim racing. and esports. And I also knew single-seaters like that from years of sim racing and esports. So when I turned up to my first event, I won the class. And my dad was also racing that day, and he couldn't get it into him for the life of him how I'd managed to beat him. And it's because I knew Croft from sim racing. I knew where to break. Yeah. I knew my lines. I knew how to get the most out of a single-seater. And even though I'd never driven anything in my life, I was able to instantly get on the pace because I knew the skills involved. With karting, I'm rubbish at karting because I didn't kart when I was younger. And I go out in a kart race against karters and I would be useless. I would be way off the pace. So they're very different skills, in my opinion. But it doesn't necessarily mean, just because karting's in real life, it doesn't mean that it's going to be a better skill in when you actually come to racing and, you know, in reality too. I mean, karting, one thing you do really learn is how aggressive and cutthroat and competitive real racing is. Because you could think you're good, like Justin said, you know, you can race against your family and your friends and be 3 seconds quicker. And then if you turn up to a proper serious kart race against, you know, people that are in GP3 or F3 or F2 or anything like that, it's absolutely incredible how quick these guys are. It's absolutely phenomenal. I had to say, I had a similar experience where I raced against a bunch of people that were in F3 at the time. And it was my first kart race, having got into it by breaking the world record on their sim. And it was a real eye-opener to how quick these guys are. It was absolutely phenomenal. So, yeah, I think there's so many different angles to this. I really do. Yeah. I mean, do you think that this change that we keep talking about from karting to sim racing potentially, or this merge, do you think this has already happened? Or do you think this is something that's still, you know, gaining momentum? Because I feel like we've been saying it for a while now.
I think it's kind of already happened. And I think 2020 really facilitated that in a huge way.
Agreed.
The pandemic and everything has really changed things around. I can tell you, by the way, that my very limited real world racing experience, it has never gone well whatsoever. So I don't think that it is one of those things that actually does transfer over. I'm terrible in a kart, absolutely terrible. In a right hand corner, I'm riding the brake all the time. For some, you know, just my left foot just goes down through the right hand corners. And I'm just riding the brake, even if it's a flat out quarter.
I've never had that problem personally, and I bet you Tom hasn't either. I wonder why.
I have no idea. I have no idea. But I can tell you, yeah, I was absolutely terrible. And that was after having been a sim racer for a few years, you know, driving around on my DFGT, just, you know, nothing too crazy. And then before sim racing, I did some autocross as well. And I was absolutely rubbish there as well, too. Just got completely annihilated by people in very similar cars who were much, much faster than me. But I didn't do it very often. I went just a handful of times, and my car wasn't, you know, I was on like the cheap tires, just because I was like a starving teenager and stuff like that. So I was on whatever all weathers I could afford and that kind of thing. So, you know, I was a little bit down on pace when it comes to that sort of stuff, but also I was just bad. It's not 100% transferable. And I think there's been situations, I forget who it was. There was that really, really popular iRacer that went and did some real life driving at Road Atlanta one time.
Gregor
Hutu. I remember.
Gregor Hutu.
Hutu, that's right. And he got sick. He got like he almost threw up or something. Yeah, exactly. So just because you're good at sim racing does not mean you're going to be good at real life driving. Just because you're good at real life driving does not mean you're going to be good at sim racing. But it's certainly possible that you could be, you know, that you could be good at both things. It's really, really weird. It's a different, they share a lot of skills, but at the same time, they don't share a lot of skills. It's really hard to talk about for people who aren't familiar with both real racing. But it's nothing like, you know, people that play Call of Duty and stuff, you know, there is zero skill transfer to real life shooting of guns and Call of Duty, but there is some transfer between sim racing and video games. You know what I mean? So it's similar, but different. It's an interesting one.
For me, they're supplementary things. If I was wanted to be a racing driver, seat time is king. And so I would, sim gives you the opportunity to test more, practice more.
I mean, all the real drivers
in between races, right?
Sim. Yeah, all the real drivers, they test on a simulator. It's not for no reason.
Yeah, exactly. So it gives you more skills and it helps you build upon things. I just think sometimes it can be difficult to think, right, okay, I want to be Formula One world champion. I'm only going to do sim racing instead of go-karting. That's going to be a bit tricky.
I think there are transferable skills, and there are definitely things that transfer, and there are things that aren't. You know, I would always say that the knowledge transfers and the ability to learn how to go faster transfers, but not the feeling. You don't get the fear is the biggest one for me. When I first drove a real car, even if you're driving like a Mazda MX-5 around somewhere like Alton, you do that in a sim and it's boring because it's slow and it's like, oh, get to the next corner, hurry up, blah, blah, blah.
I know.
You take Island Bend flat out in real life and it is terrifying, and you do not get that fear. So Justin's right in that you know, there's no guarantee. You could be amazing on a sim and you could suck in real life.
Yeah.
You could also, and vice versa, we've seen it multiple times. We've seen good drivers in real life, terrible in a sim. But then recently, like, I've been doing a lot of racing with Jenson Button, who's obviously a really good real-life racer. You might have heard of him. And he is doing an amazing job at becoming an esports-level driver on the sim. You know, in ACC, he's been putting so much time into it, and he's getting right into the engineering of it. And he is at the level now where he could go in any esports competition with the likes of James Baldwin and not be far off, and he will be winning races and stuff. He's really can transfer the skills. So. Oh yeah, absolutely. Anyway, you know, he's right up there at the top with all the quickest guys in the team and stuff like that. He's right there, and he's putting in as much time as anyone else. So I think it varies from case to case, but there's definitely possibility to transfer skills.
What you said
over,
there so. About the fear, that is the main thing, I think. Like the feeling and the motion and the feeling in your bum of the inertia is very hard to replicate. I know there are some really good motion sims. They're not affordable for everybody. But even so, it's, you know, in the back of your mind in a sim that if you crash, you're not going to hurt yourself. But let me tell you a story. When I was driving my Fiat Panda around the Nürburgring in the rain, I knew every corner and apex and braking point because it's perfectly replicated in video games, right? So I knew exactly which corner was coming up. So therefore, I had an advantage over some other people who were there, right? Which is great. But, oh my God, the fear inside you when you go around the carousel, because you think, if I go off here, you know, I could hurt myself and my partner. I also have to pay the bill. Also, how am I going to drive the car home from Germany, you know, if it's damaged?
Exactly.
So you just don't get that in a sim. And you never will.
The fear is the biggest thing. The fear is the biggest thing. It's the biggest thing for me. And I think arguably driving in real life is actually easier than driving on a sim because you've got more feeling. So like car control, learning stuff, it's actually easier. And that's what makes it hard for some real life drivers to go into the sim. However, going from sim to real life, you may have the skills to do it, but trust me, you'll go out there in the first lap and you will be miles off the pace. And you might think, that's weird, I'm only a second off the pace in a sim. Why am I 10 seconds off the pace in real life? And it's because of the fear and learning that feeling and getting used to it. So yeah, I mean, we could talk about this all day, but I'm aware of the time, so I'm gonna wrap up there, guys. But thank you so much, as always, for joining us. And of course, a big thanks to you guys at home for listening. Make sure you subscribe via your favorite podcast service or on YouTube to catch future episodes as they are released. Also, don't forget to join us on social media at TractionGG, where I'm sure Justin will be sending many tweets your way, or Facebook, whatever you call them, and Instagram things. And visit our website, of course, traction.gg, for all your racing game news and updates, where Tom will be helping sort you out. Until next time, keep it pinned. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.
See ya.